It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45. Baseball sabermetrics godfather Bill James has a hell of an idea to speed up baseball. At 2:30, why does June 8th matter? How about Anthony Bourdain and jelly donuts? And in mere minutes, the college football playoff could be expanding much sooner than any of us realize. And just how many teams might that include? The number may surprise you. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
I've been talking about the number for 2 hours, and it surprises me.
Yeah.
Man, we will get into that in just a second. Let me update everybody first on super regional stuff and then a little bit of basketball. Texas baseball will take on South Florida. We found that out yesterday. Congrats to the Bulls for getting to the super regional. It will be a Saturday, Sunday, and if necessary, Monday setup for the super regionals. And those first two games are set for 8 o'clock first pitches. So if you have stuff to do this coming weekend, but you want to go to the dish, great news. You got all kinds of time during the day. Need to mow the lawn? I'd be careful, though. It's going to be hot. 94, 95 degrees for a high. But 8 o'clock, first pitch times for Saturday and Sunday. We also had 7 other teams besides South Florida make their way into the bracket. We've got our field of 16 set for the Super Regionals. 2 out of 3, and you get to Omaha, Texas, Arkansas, Vandy, and Tennessee, the top 4 overall seeds in the country. They have all advanced. They will all host, and they are all trying to get to Omaha. If you're looking for chalk, that's what you root for. If you don't like anybody, any of those teams, and your team's not in it, that's who I'd tell you to root for. Root for some chalk, get those 4 in, and then whoever the other 4 are, well, that's just a little bit of gravy. But I'd love to see that, Trey. Top 4 seeds. Three SEC powers that are looking really good. Texas, who's obviously looking really good. Let's get them all to Omaha.
Do they reseed when you get to Omaha?
No, it becomes, well, do they reseed? I don't know that they do any seeding because you just
reshuffle?
No, because you're on the same side. You're going to go in and you're going to play.
Okay.
Like Texas will play in a 4-team double elimination on their side of the bracket.
Okay.
So just think of it as like 2 regionals happening at the same time.
All right.
If that makes sense. And then 2 teams come through there, and then you wipe everything clean and go 2 out of 3 just between those 2.
Okay.
That's how they decided to do it, which is much better than when I was growing up. When I was growing up, Omaha was a little bit more convoluted than that. They would cross it, and you'd get sent across the bracket and back.
Yep.
It was so bizarre. But congrats to all those teams that have advanced. Texas and Texas Tech are in from the state of Texas, along with Dallas Baptist. And those are your 2 Big 12 teams, Tech and Texas, getting in. Elsewhere, you've got, we talked about the NBA a little bit. Brooklyn wins, looks good, up 2-0. Kevin Durant's good, this just in. Phoenix wins, they're up 1-0 on Denver. We'll see how Jokic and the crowd react to that. Remember, Phoenix, that's not an upset. Phoenix is the number 2 seed. We have to keep reminding ourselves, but they're playing teams that have had injuries. And I think people just naturally assume, Trey, that Phoenix wins because the other team is facing something. But, and I know Jamal Murray's not in this series,
mm-hmm.
but Phoenix is pretty damn good, too.
Oh, they are.
That's a good team. That was a fun game to watch, too. I was entertained by that.
Yeah, I hear it was closer than the final score. Phoenix pulled away late.
In fact, here's what happened. Phoenix went, I think it was about mid to late third quarter, into the fourth quarter. Phoenix went on a 39-12 run.
Wow.
That changed the ball game. Before then, it was pretty tight and pretty entertaining. Atlanta at Philly tonight. Clippers at Utah. Here's your update. Mike Conley is out for game 1. Hamstring strain. So the Jazz, who obviously have been without Mitchell earlier in the playoffs, now they're with that when they were trying to get in or when they were trying to finish up the season and start the playoffs. Now they're going to be without Conley for this game. We'll see how that affects things. That game is in Utah.
That's a bummer to hear, but yeah. I think Utah will still be able to overcome that one.
I want to see what the Clippers look like in this series, changing things. Will we come out of this series saying, wow, the Mavs really weren't the Mavs and Clippers really were not the elite?
Yeah, it's either that or Oh, wow. L.A. really did figure it out starting in game six and went on a roll from there.
Yeah, I wonder what Kawhi would have told you he's learned from that. Utah, much more of a complete team than the Dallas Mavericks are right now. So we'll see what that series looks like. The big story of the day for us has been college football. So if you're a college football fan, lock on into this story. It still amazes me that they're willing to go this high. So there's a Pete Thamel story out today, and that would be Pete Thamel is
Yahoo Sports.
Yahoo Sports, thank you. So a Yahoo Sports story talking about the progression of playoff talks in college football. And basically, here's your schedule. Coming up on July 17th and 18th in Chicago, Trey used to live there, drink up. They're going to get together, and by they, I mean a group of four people. It's Greg Sankey of the SEC. It's Bob Bowlesby of the Big 12. I know, wake up. Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, and the Mountain West commissioner, apparently his name is Craig Thompson. They're all going to get together, and if you know your college football, you know why those four people might matter in a room together. I might argue that the Big Ten may need a little representation, but as Trey pointed out earlier, Big Ten, ACC are going through, and Pac-12, going through new guys at commissioner, so maybe that's why they're not a part of this. This is the small commission that's supposed to report to a bigger commission. They're going to get together and they're going to discuss it, and they will put out a recommendation. Then there'll be, you know, CFP board of managers, 11 presidents and chancellors and everybody from all the different conferences. They'll come together and figure something out for maybe like the fall. But the most, I think, unexpected part of this is that in all the discussions, we were figuring they're going to talk about a 16 playoff. Maybe they'll think about eight teams. But, Trey, it's a 12-team playoff that they seem to be liking more than any other.
Yeah, 12-team playoff. Ain't it great, Chad? We were hopeful for six. Eight felt like it was a possibility. 10 was probably a little bit of a stretch. I wasn't even considering 12.
No.
Whenever we would talk about playoff expansion, 12, heck, give me 16. And I do feel strongly, going back to our conversation with Jeff Ward an hour ago, that 32 teams, that would be too much.
That feels like too much.
That would be over
me.
The line. Because at that point, you're having to let in too many teams that are potentially like 8-4, 7-5. I'm sorry, that's not postseason worthy in this sport. But top 16 would be. I think that would be intriguing for me.
I have always thought that, because it's the, I think 1AA as I was growing up would do a 32-team playoff, and maybe there was even one of those divisions, Division 2 or 3, that would maybe even try to do 64. It always felt like too much. Once you've played, the regular season does need to matter for certain things, certain weeding out processes, but I like this idea. I like anything six or up. I thought the absolute max you might get to would be 16, but me, realistically, I thought, okay, eight's realistic. Eight is something they could get to where you go five power fives, three at large, and let's roll.
It's that even number also, and even though I'm not opposed to buys necessarily, I think because they are starting this out at the better seeds home field, that it does make sense to try and square it up so that you can make sure that those top four teams do get the financial boost that comes from getting to host not just another home game, a home game that is in the technical postseason.
Dude.
So if you're still going to stick with 12, what they probably have to do is give some sort of incentive to those top four teams. Say, hey, you're missing out on this revenue, but we're bringing in so many billions of dollars, we're actually going to give you this payout for making the top four. That's the only way around it right now, because otherwise you've got to figure out some way to hook those other four teams up with home games.
So somebody suggested the idea of, if you're going to do a 12-team playoff, if you just jumped in, five power fives get in, the conference champions, a group of five gets in, and then you go six at large. That's their idea. So if you do, Trey, the home games with seeds 5, 6, 7, and 8 getting to host, and then you let 1 through 4 have a bye week, would you also be in favor then of one of our listeners' ideas saying, well, you just re-rack it the next week and you let Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame from last year host quarterfinal matchups?
I think that's the best solution, but I also know that they are making every concerted effort possible. And look, I understand it. I have no respect for these secondary bowl games, but they're trying to make some of these other bowl games, they're trying to give them some additional value, especially because this is likely going to cut into those New Year's Six. Four of those games are going to happen where the New Year's Six normally are, the Fiesta Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, Jerry World in Dallas, and what's the other one? The Peach Bowl?
Yeah.
The game in Atlanta.
Right.
So four of those six are likely going to be quarterfinal homes, and that's how it should be. That's probably how it should be. Therefore, you have to either pay out those top four or go ahead and expand it to 16 to allow them the opportunity to have a home game too.
See, obviously, if you go with a 12-team playoff, we all know the math there. That means you have 11 games. So the first thing would be, could you have 11? Because right now we do not have 11 bowl games that truly matter.
No.
So let's imagine that for a second just blows my mind.
How many years, and it's every year, but how many games each year do we hear, even amongst the New Year's Six, oh, so-and-so didn't want to be there. They had college football playoff aspirations, and this is very much a the bronze medal game for them.
Man, I'm glad you said that, too. Because you could take a team like that Georgia team that played Texas and supposedly felt a certain way, or that Bama team that played Utah and, well how did they feel going into the game? You could take those teams, which were damn good football teams, and then give them the incentive that they were ultimately looking for. It's like, no, you're still in it. Even though you lost to X, Y, or Z, you lost the SEC title game, you're not done. You're still pretty badass here, and we're going to put you into this bracket.
Because how many of those Georgia players are choosing to opt out of the bowl game to focus on the NFL draft?
Not near as
many. They had like six guys.
Exactly. They'd have all played. They would all have played.
And that doesn't diminish Texas' victory. It was a great victory. Longhorns beat the hell out of them that night.
Oh,
but
yeah,
it makes a difference, though. The bodies that they didn't have on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, till the day I die, one of the dumbest arguments I'll ever hear is an SEC team that didn't want to be at the Sugar Bowl. So I don't even want to hear that. I don't want to hear that mess.
It is so ridiculous.
That is your fault if you're an SEC team that didn't want to play
Georgia,
the Sugar Bowl.
Georgia, you hadn't made that many championship games. Give me a break.
Yeah, that was silly. But so the question here would be, if you go 11 true neutral games, but you do it like they do now, Trey, with bowl games, you play the geographical game. So if Clemson needs to get love, you know where you could send them.
Mm-hmm.
You could send them back to Charlotte. You could send Alabama back to Atlanta. You could send Texas or Texas A&M to Jerry World. If you do it that way, you could send Big Ten teams to the Colts Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You could figure out maybe it's the Niners Stadium that they would love out west. Is that what it would be? Or Rose Bowl? Probably Rose Bowl, right, with the most clout. What am I thinking?
Right, right.
So you go Rose Bowl there.
Although, maybe you consider the new Rams and Chargers stadium.
Could be, it could be SoFi. It's a good point. Could be that stadium. Is it the Raiders stadium in Vegas? You got a beautiful new jewel in Vegas you could hang out with. And Vegas is where, you know what? Vegas is where the Pac-12 title game's moving to.
Oh, yeah.
So could you do it that way because you're getting more of that bowl money going out, making it all. Now, look, I like the idea of on campus. Trust me, I do. But if we get into this kind of system, this will also feed to what we discussed earlier, Trey. Hopefully, less games where I'll pick a team that's got four non-conference to deal with. Less games where, say, an A&M in this region goes after, an SFA or a Western Carolina, and they go after Oregon or they go after Michigan or something like that. So if you have more of those games in the regular season, you're giving that home crowd a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get towards the end of the year, and if you're badass, if you're Texas and you're badass, you know you can tell your fans, hey, we're this seed. We're going to Jerry World for the whatever it would be, right?
The quarterfinal?
The five-something game, right? The quarters game.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going for the quarterfinal. We're going up to Jerry World. And then if you're bringing a team from another region, you get a home field advantage that we're all used to right now in the bowl games.
I do wonder if having the four quarterfinal games at neutral sites, if that's overextending the fan bases too much, like asking too much of those fan bases to travel to wherever to watch their team play. And that's going to be less of an issue here at Texas, obviously. I recognize that. But other fan bases aren't going to be able to swing three straight weeks of traveling to whatever exotic locale. You know, the cost of airfare and hotel and food and everything else to go on top of the game ticket that you're paying for, too.
Yeah, you're right. And, I mean, they've got to figure that part of it out? Do they love the idea? This will be really the next question. If 12 is all they're really seriously considering, and again, they'll meet in July, make a recommendation for maybe the fall. We might find out a change in the fall, and then it's just about when do they implement it. But do they like this on-campus idea or not? Is that what conference commissioners will push for? Will Bob Bowles be pushed for that? Like, on behalf of Texas and Oklahoma, is that what he will push for? When Sankey shows up with the idea of Tuscaloosa, Death Valley, Auburn, and the Swamp in his head, is that what he's thinking? Does he think of it as, man, that'd be pretty cool. Even if Florida's not elite, they get to host a game? Well, that's a pretty cool idea. You know, like if you do it from last year, Bama would get to the bye, but Florida, for that matter, A&M and Florida would have hosted games, and Georgia's in one of those games.
Where was Florida? At seven?
Seven.
Six? Okay.
They're at seven. So they would be...
Oklahoma was at six.
Right. So it would be like Florida hosting Indiana.
That would have been a fun game.
Yeah, it'd been a fun game.
Can we get this going in 2021, please?
Right? Even the and then
got to wait two more seasons.
And then how about the little guy bowl at the end? 12 seed would have been Coastal, and the 8 seed is Cincinnati. That's beautiful. Cincinnati gets to host. Now, see, this is where you'd piss the big dogs off. If you let Cincinnati host a playoff game and then turn to Bama and Clemson and say, no, sorry, y'all get a bye, and then you have to play in a neutral, even though it's a regional neutral for you, you don't get the home game. What do you mean we don't get the home game? Clemson's like, we don't get to run down the hill and touch the rock? We're really good. We haven't lost a game, and Cincinnati gets the love? That's where I'd fight back hard if I'm the SEC, specifically SEC, ACC, and let's throw in the Big Ten, because that's where Ohio State's living. Hell, Oklahoma. That Bowlesby should fight for Oklahoma there. Because they've been in the playoff.
There has to be a plan here. Whether that plan is to try and push for a 16-team playoff or whether that plan involves paying those four teams out, there's no way you're going to deny them the home gate revenue, those top four teams. You played so well. Congratulations. You're out several million dollars, whatever it is that you make on game days.
Yeah.
Something has not been stated just yet that will impact those top four if they do stick with 12. Otherwise, they're going to whittle it down to 8 or they're going to move it up to 16. And given those two options, Chad, give me 16 all day.
Okay.
You might get a three-loss team at that point, but that three-loss team will be disposed of pretty quickly by the number one and number two seed.
I'm going to tell you what. The other thing is that time of year, getting to have a playoff game in your stadium, the atmosphere we all understand, but what about weather? If you're the right team at the right moment in the Big Ten, you get to bring people up to your house like we always talk about in the NFL, right? Does Kansas City get to have a home game? Do the Saints get to drag somebody into the dome?
Yeah.
We can have those conversations in college?
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? I can't stop smiling about this idea. You kidding me?
I was surprised at how down Jeff Ward was on college football.
Oh, I found the source of that. He's a soccer fan. He's confused. It's okay. He'll get there.
I think he has some valid criticisms with regards to how long the games take. And I get the knee down, you're down rule. I think I would probably be okay seeing that one changed. I'm all right with pass interference staying like it is, though. Because there is such a talent gap between the haves and have-nots. That kind of allows the have-nots to stick around a little bit better.
I do love that Jeff Ward even makes me seem like a young fan when it comes to the knee down thing, because I'm so with him on that.
Yeah.
It's never made sense my whole life, and they need to go to the high school level and officially change that rule for all time.
Agreed.
Because then it's so easy to follow. The only thing I've ever heard is,
well, safety of the players, Chad.
I've never seen anyone's safety protected by that rule.
Yeah, guess what they've stopped doing in the NFL? Allowing guys to spear another dude who is what? What's the term? Defenseless player.
Defenseless, yeah. Exactly.
You can't just come up and put your helmet into somebody because he's on the ground and hasn't been touched yet. You come up and touch him.
Man, we can have overtime discussions, length of game discussions. You can have whatever you want. If you come up with a playoff system like this, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm starting to, the more I think about it, the more I understand why they are figuring this out. Because here we go, Trey. The first team last year that would have been bitching. Let's go to the list. The number 13 ranked team in the final rankings last year that would have been left out of this whole discussion was Mack Brown and North Carolina. And what would you say right back to Mack Brown? Mack, you had a chance to win your conference. You lost three games.
Yeah.
So, and I'm a believer in we don't need to cap and say if you lose a certain amount of games, you're absolutely out. But just for the record, for the people that are worried about that, there would have only been two teams to make this playoff that would have lost three games, Iowa State and Florida. And you're high if you're telling me you didn't want to see those two teams play.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to see Trask and Purdy? You don't want to see that? Because I do.
Yep.
I know they're three lost teams, but they're three lost teams in pretty damn good conferences, and I'd allow that. So Mack Brown would have had an argument. Then it was Northwestern, Iowa, BYU, USC, Miami.
Yeah.
Right. So we've said this for years. Let's just keep moving that argument down. The argument's finally been moved from that stupid 2-3 thing we used to do, and now we do a 4-5 thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you could get it to a point where, and look, I'm in a world where I get to hear Dick Vitale have a 68-69 bitch every year in that tournament. But if you get that bitch.
And is Dick Vitale pushing for 69 teams?
No. I'm saying every year that's essentially what they discuss, right?
Okay.
Who should be in, four in, right? So this would be, let's take that argument down to 12-13. That's where you'd be arguing.
Yeah.
The 13th ranked team, man. I would love that because it deals with all the issues. You would have gotten Coastal and Cincinnati in. You would have gotten A&M in easily. And then teams like Oklahoma, Georgia, Indiana. That Indiana team that loved their coach so much.
Yeah.
It was so much fun to watch.
Unfortunately, Penix suffered the injury, so they probably wouldn't have made much noise in the playoffs. But if that was a healthy team, that would have been a fun team to get to watch perform in the playoffs.
But they're in, man, and that would be so cool.
And I think that's why, speaking of your 12-13 or 4-5 or 6-7 argument, I think that's why I would want to go 16, is because the 16-17 argument, you would get to tell either of those schools that was that upset, what, you wanted to go get embarrassed by Alabama,
right,
or Clemson?
It's true.
You know you're not going to win that game. Go watch the team that got in. Go watch them get humiliated by 4+ touchdowns.
Oh, all right, Trey. I'll do it your way. The 16-1 matchup, guess who would have had, you want to do it? Let's do it in Tuscaloosa. In Tuscaloosa. Who goes to Tuscaloosa to face Nick Saban's defense? Wilson and BYU.
Oh.
Right?
Yes.
A 10-1 football team, by the way.
Dang.
10-1. What's his name? Zach Wilson?
Zach Wilson.
Zach,
yeah.
Wilson. I wouldn't call him Kyle Wilson for something. Zach Wilson and his pretty face going to Tuscaloosa to probably get his pretty face rearranged.
Yeah.
For a day. That would have been your 1-16 matchup. Yeah, if you want to just do it that way, that would have given us the, you know, that would give you the stuff we're used to in the tournament. You know, your 5-12s, A&M and Coastal, by the way, would have been your 5-12 if you want one of those. Clemson takes on Iowa, so on and so forth. Mack's group would have been in playing Notre Dame. Notre Dame, North Carolina, your 4-13. Come on, baby. Mm. Let's get it done. All right, now Trey's trying to talk me into 16. I can't let Kevin Dunn know we're going to 16 now. Let's just go with the 12, see if Kevin's good with that.
Just don't make eye contact with him between the shows today.
No, we can't look directly at Kevin talking about a 12-team playoff. All right, coming up next, it is Why Today Matters. We've got birthdays to hit, also some food to talk about because it's kind of what we do. We'll also talk about our favorite drinks. Don't move. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
First time I've heard somebody bark into a song. That was interesting. What's this, Trey?
This is Mr. Vedder, Chad, and Pearl Jam, Do the Evolution. And our evolution has obviously included technology. Technology is the focus of the newest episode of Books on Pod, booksonpod.com, with author Kevin Roos. His new book is Future Proof, 9 Rules for Humans in the Age of Automation. It's how we should best conduct ourselves as our robot overlords overtake our lives. But Kevin actually says it's not that dire. Find out what he means by checking us out at booksonpod.com.
I always love when I can hear in a musician someone they love. And it's not that they're trying to copy them. It's just that you can feel the inspiration. So like when, you know, Paul McCartney sang Long Tall Sally, he's admitted he's trying to sound like Little Richard. That's who he was kind of envisioning there. When I hear that Pearl Jam song, it reminds me how much Eddie Vedder loves Neil Young. Because that sounds like a Neil Young and Crazy Horse song in a way, like in that style. Just unbridled, there are no rules, let's just go.
Yep.
And that's what was great about Neil and Crazy Horse back in the day. I saw them live one time, awesome show, one of the best shows I've ever been to. And I know Eddie loves Neil Young.
Yes,
and
he does.
That's what that song reminds me of.
Isn't Neil Young referred to as the godfather of grunge?
Yeah, I think he is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those guys really dig Neil, which is a weird, it's a weird connection. You don't immediately think about it, but once you listen and really get in, because Neil had so many weird periods where he'd go from acoustic Neil to electric Neil, and when that dude plugged in, duck. It was something to behold. That guy was an incredible electric performer back then. So good stuff there. And again, Trey, connecting it all to the podcast today, which is Future Proof. I'd say the podcast for the week, but Trey pumps out two of these a week and does Tuesday and Thursday where you do music. It's unbelievable.
Yep. Feel bad for my wife and kids because they get seriously neglected with all the reading that I have to do. But it's worth it, Chad. What? It'll be worth it 20 years from now.
There you go. Dadgum right. All right. Let's jump into Why Today Matters. It's June 8th here.
This hour brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialists. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialists, 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
We will get back to some good texts coming in on that 12-team playoff idea. But, Trey, we do need to mention, a lot of times we talk birthdays. We don't do a lot of death days on the show, but you told me earlier today is the anniversary of a famous death from just a few years ago.
Yeah, it was 3 years ago that Anthony Bourdain died.
Mm.
And he is one of those people who is a major influence on me and Kevin Dunn and so many other people's lives who love food, who love to travel, who love to travel in part because of this experience of getting to go through learning about a new culture and new cuisines and things like that. Anthony Bourdain unlocked that door, opened that window for a lot of us out there. So I hope that his daughter, and I know he had, I think it was just a girlfriend at the time, but I know his daughter is probably missing her dad today, so my thoughts are with her today.
He was my kind of food show guy.
Yeah.
I never liked the over-the-top, fluffy food show type of person.
Nor did he.
He was fantastic. Do you think Anthony Bourdain slammed some jelly donuts back in the day? What do you think his opinion of the jelly donut would have been?
Maybe, because he ate so little, he wouldn't have to think about counting calories or sugar intake or anything else. He's okay. Like, yeah, I'll just go ahead and cram this donut.
Are you into a jelly donut? Because it's not my thing.
No, I'm starting to do the overrated, underrated thing when I come across certain birthdays or days on Why Today Matters. Jelly donuts are overrated to me. There are way too many people that like jelly donuts, and I only know that because whenever I go into a donut shop, half the donuts are jelly filled.
Is that right?
There's no way they're not throwing a quarter of those things out.
Plus, the other thing with me is, if it's a food where I'm in danger of getting a stain on my clothes, it better be damn good. And I just feel like the jelly donut is like the ultimate in, oh, this is probably going to stain what I'm wearing.
That's a great way to put it.
And I just don't want to go through the trouble. I don't know where it's going to squirt out, when it's going to squirt out, how it's going to squirt out with the jelly. Plus, I love a donut and I love jelly, but I don't need them together.
Are there shirt colors that you just don't buy anymore? Like, I stopped buying baby blue shirts because I swear it didn't even take two or three wears before something would inevitably end up on the front of that shirt that I could not get out in the washer.
I try to stay away from the whites and light blues. Yeah.
Whites also, yeah. If I'm wearing a white shirt, it's usually going to have something on the front that can help hopefully mask it a little bit if I do have an accident.
Also, the darker the green, the better. I feel like if I go light green, if there's anything in that mint green, light green world, it's going to get stained up fast.
Possibly.
For some reason, barbecue sauce loves my light green clothing. I don't know what it is. So National Jelly Donut Day. Also in the food and drink world, Trey, it is National Name Your Poison Day.
Okay.
I'll pay for your drink today. What are you ordering? What do you want?
I'm not really feeling like drinking today.
Oh, God. Well, you play the game. Just play the game.
All right, gin and tonic.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll go talk. I mean, if you're paying, I'll go top shelf gin.
There you go.
And I don't know if they have top shelf tonics, but I'll go tonic as well. Squeeze a lime. I don't need some of the extras. Don't simple syrup my gin and tonic. It's not gin, tonic, and simple syrup. It's gin and tonic. You want to throw a rosemary twig in there? I'm okay with that. Red Ash did that a few weeks back. when I went there. They actually dropped some juniper berries in. You can chew on the juniper berries if you really want to.
Of course you can.
Feeling especially alcoholic on that day. I don't need any of those things, but the red ash gin and tonic was pretty good, so credit to them for that one.
Yeah, if I'm naming my poison, I'll go Tito's and pineapple juice.
Tito's pineapple.
Tito's vodka is probably my favorite of all time. There's one that they used to make out in Smithville that was another one that was good, but you can't get it anymore. So Tito's and pineapple. Tito's and really anything. I can mix vodka with just about anything, but I'll go pineapple juice.
How often do you go Tito's DP? Because you're the guy that introduced us to vodka Dr. Peppers back in the day.
The Tito's DP is a good call. I'm staying away from soda. But if it was, since it is named my poison day, yeah, let's go there. Tito's and Dr. Pepper. We'll do that. Yeah,
that's a party.
The VDP was a solid drink back in the day because I realized, like, everybody's doing the Jack and Coke, something in Coke. I'm like, well, what about the good doctor? The good doctor could be a mixer.
That's right.
Let's mix it up. Name your poison day. It's also Jerry Stiller's birthday today.
Jerry Stiller, he was hilarious as Frank Costanza. I know he's done a lot of other things, but I'll always think of him as Frank Costanza first and foremost.
Yeah, we lost him in 2020, and he would have been 94 today.
Yeah, he's from that same area of comedians that Joan Rivers was in, and it was Joan Rivers' birthday today as well. Do you think Joan Rivers receives enough due for what she meant to stand-up comedy and what she meant to comedy as a whole? I know she became a caricature over the last 10 years of her life, and everybody focused on the plastic surgery.
Right.
She was hilarious, though.
Yeah, I think the answer is no, but it's happening. I think it's on the way to happening, and hopefully when we have more discussions, they just did a great documentary about the history of female comics, and Joan obviously got a lot of love there.
Okay.
But I'm just hoping that more and more, as the documentaries about comics in general happen, that Joan is getting her love. Because in my lifetime, there were like, what, maybe three people that Johnny Carson came to trust to do his show for him when he didn't do it. And she was really the main one. Like, there was kind of a Dave period, and there was kind of the Jay Leno thing, which led to what it led to. But Joan was it for a long time. And that was one of my early introductions to her of like, whoa, he trusts Joan to. So it was like that whole nother level of not only do I think she's funny, not only do I think she's funny and, oh, it's a female comedian. We didn't see a lot of that. Carol Burnett's different. She wasn't doing stand-up. So, yeah, I think she probably still needs a little love because you're right. It was a joke at the end. It was all about the face and the plastic surgery and everything. But she was still out there.
Oh, yeah.
That doc they did on her where she's on stage and got, like, heckled by somebody and she was making fun of cancer or whatever it was. And they were trying to shout her down and Joan shouted right back at him and didn't back off. It was incredible.
I feel like I need to go back and rewatch some of those E-Red carpets. I'm guessing she was like hammering on Hollywood a lot harder than I realized as I was flipping through the channels and rolling my eyes, because you just assume that they're talking about the gowns that they're wearing, who they're wearing, or whatever else. But I'm guessing Joan gave those celebs a good dose of medicine.
Yeah, I think that was kind of her deal. And then she kind of, you know, because she ultimately led the way to somebody like Kathy Griffin, who's in that same vein.
True.
It's not always my favorite style of comedy, just that sort of straight up, like, sort of insulting famous people comedy. But Joan got that started, and now it's come through. I think there's a lot of comics that do respect what she did.
It depends. If you do it well, then I'm a big fan of it. Like, my two favorite award show monologues of all time are Norm MacDonald on the ESPYs back in the 1990s.
That was
when
good.
He was taking some just spot-on shots at people. Some in the crowd, some not. But then Ricky Gervais's Golden Globes from a couple years ago, that was sheer brilliance.
That's actually an interesting guy to bring up because Ricky is kind of an evolution from Joan Rivers. I never would have thought of those two together.
Mm.
But that's kind of the same world. Yeah, Joan Rivers would have been 88 years old today. She died back in 2014. I forgot it's been 7 years since Joan died.
Wow.
Time is flying, man. All right, there's a little bit of why today matters to us. Hopefully it matters to you as well. Coming up next, stems and seeds. Got a couple of notes from the NFL before we get out of here, including an update on the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. This is The Horn.
Shirts and skins. We'll be right back.
That is such a great little walking bass right there. What's this, Trey?
Well, this is called Me Panicking, with the theme being automation, AI, and technology, and just typing in Daft Punk and hitting play on Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger.
There you go.
Because today is a shameless podcast promotion Tuesday. The author is Kevin Roos, the author who I speak with on Books on Pod, and his book is Future Proof, 9 Rules for Humans in the Age of Automation. You can check out our conversation on why the inevitable war between man and machine, it may not be inevitable, and we have the power in our hands to keep that from happening. Check out what Kevin has to say at booksonpod.com.
So after this conversation, I have a quick question regarding my 14-year-old child. When she asks us if she can have an Alexa in her room to fend off the battle with the robots, should we just say no?
I would say no, yes.
Okay, because my gut is to say no. I have no need for that.
Talk to Dave about that one. Apparently, there's something going on with the Alexas that you need to be very careful about.
All right, yeah.
So talk with Dave about that.
I'm going to go with no. I wasn't allowed to go no on the phones earlier. I think I'm going to go no on that one. All right, let's get you some stems and seeds. We'll start with some good news in Dallas.
No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. This is something I think we all knew, but now it's even more official and just an updated version. Mike McCarthy, asked about Dak Prescott, says he will be a full go at camp at this point. Dak coming off of that horrific foot injury, foot, ankle, heel, leg, whatever it ended up being. But they say he'll be able to go full blast at camp. And today is the day that the mini camps open up, when it's no longer voluntary. So this is supposedly when everybody shows up. But the expectation is no Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, no Deshaun Watson in Houston. And we'll see what happens with the rest of the league. But that is going on today in the NFL. 8th through the 10th, your June mini camps going on right now.
Congratulations to you and all other Cowboys fans that Dak is going to be a full go.
That's
obviously a big development for
no doubt
what this team might be capable of in 2021. Chad, we came across a baseball lifer who had an interesting proposal on how to help speed up baseball.
Okay.
Bill James, who is the godfather of baseball sabermetrics, he was one of the original stats guys back in the day.
Okay.
He was on the MLB Network, I believe this was yesterday, yesterday afternoon, and he said that in order to speed up the game, baseball should consider requiring the batter to wear whatever equipment he wears to the plate around the bases as well. That'll speed up the game. And it makes sense when you consider that most of these guys have a shin guard, an elbow guard, something else going on here, and it does take 30 seconds to a minute to get that stuff off and back to the dugout before going back to first base. It's a little thing, but I think it could make a big difference.
I hadn't really thought of that taking a lot of time. I guess when you add it all up, like I saw one of the softball players in Oklahoma City that got to first, it was got hit by a pitch, I think, and she'd ripped something off of her arm and had it over by the dugout as she's running down to first. I didn't feel like they lost any time. But what we're talking about is if I'm standing on first, and I'm like Barry Bonds back in the day, right? I'm unbuckling and unstrapping everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So Bill James says he followed up his appearance, which was tweeted out by MLB Now, the video was. And so he added an explanation on Twitter. He said the point is not only about batters being comfortable leaning over the plate, which is also a huge issue, obviously, but also the pace of play. Every time a batter reaches bases, 20 times a game, you see a batter reach a base. He stops the action for 45 to 60 seconds to pull off his gear and trade with the first base coach.
I think that time is overblown a little bit. I don't think it's 45 to 60 every time. I'd have to time it out. Maybe he's timed it out and he thinks it's that long. I never think it takes that long.
I'm going to trust the godfather of sabermetrics for getting a number correct.
You're right. Good. That's a fair point. Fair point. Man's probably done his research. I had never thought of that as a time saver in baseball. But I don't know. Maybe. They got to figure something out.
Were the Nets doing something during the game last night when the Greek Freak was on the free throw line?
Were the Nets player, like the ones on the floor with him or on the bench?
Let's see. Because the NBA has actually told the Nets to stop with a certain tactic when the Bucks star is shooting his free throws.
Oh, I missed that.
The team has been putting up a stopwatch on the Jumbotron to call out any 10-second violations on the Greek Freak's part.
Oh, because he got the 10-second violation, remember, in the last round.
The league has asked Brooklyn to take down the stopwatch.
Dang. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have the stopwatch. That shouldn't be allowed. And by the way, I thought that call earlier in the playoffs was cheap for him. I thought that was a cheap call.
The 10-second call?
It was at about 11 and a half if you wanted to get technical.
Okay, then he needs to speed it up there, bub.
But if you watch carefully, my man is like clicking his finger. He's not doing the full like hand, you know, hand thing they used to do. He's literally just kind of clicking, and I swear his 7, 8, 9 is fast. That would be my argument if I'm the Bucks.
Okay.
Plus, even though I don't agree with him winning the MVP, that man's one of the best players in the league. You got to treat him differently. And I didn't think it was that crazy. If he goes a consistent 15 seconds, 20 seconds, then you can do something.
Hey, the rule is 10.
I know the rule is, but that's 10 seconds.
What, are we all of a sudden going to allow guys 12 seconds to get the ball past half court?
It's based on a hand count. If you want to get a digital thing on it, that's different. You want to put the pitch clock on him? That's different. That would get it a little more consistent.
Well, I thought you said it was 11 or 12 seconds.
If you're counting, yes, I timed it out. I did time it out, and I had him at 11 on the one they called. But that's late in the game, and you're taking a free throw away.
Well, shoot your free throw.
All right, man. That's tough. That's a tough one. But I do think
I argue as if I'm somebody who actually watches these games.
I think it's interesting that Brooklyn was getting on him for it. All right, so they can't do that anymore. I'm sure that'll turn that series around. Now Brooklyn's in real trouble. Tonight, after the triple option is done, remember the Longhorn Blitz podcast. If you're a Longhorn football fan and you haven't checked that out, please do so at 7 with Rod and Jeff and Matt. They do an incredible job. In case you're just jumping in, Texas at 8 o'clock Saturday night and Sunday night with South Florida. If they need to play on Monday, that would be game 3. All right, there's your Tuesday show. We'll be back for a Wednesday show tomorrow. Have a good one. Stay safe and keep it right here on the Horn. See ya!